G'day guys, welcome to this episode of The Comeback Game. And today I'm super excited because on the line I've got Bon Halbert, the youngest son of the late Gary Halbert. And Bon is tipped to be one of the best copywriters in the world. So I'm super excited for our conversation today and our chat today. Bon, how are you doing, mate?
I'm doing great.
Yeah, fantastic. Excellent, excellent. It's actually quite early in the morning here in Australia. Whereabouts are you in the world?
I'm in Los Angeles and it's 10 o'clock on the dot.
10 o'clock on the dot, 10 a.m.
10 a.m.
10 a.m., yeah. So, Bon, look, I'd love to hear a little bit about you. You know, I understand your dad, you know, Gary Halbert, was the greatest copywriter who ever lived the planet, and you were fortunate enough or lucky enough to kind of be brought up underneath his wing and from what I understand, be instilled with a lot of his knowledge and his wisdom throughout the day, which is also seen yourself in your own right do very successful. I read there that you've sold literally millions of dollars worth of info products and so forth. So as I said, I've been super pumped. I haven't actually gone to sleep yet. So let's get into it, mate. Can you give me a little bit of a background or the guys out there, you know, what it was like growing up, obviously with your father and with him in the industry of copywriting? What's the fondest memory that you have of the late Gary Halbert?
Well, let's see, you know, I mean, it's kind of like, what's your fondest memory of your own father? There's quite a bit. And then of course, you know, my favorite memories are more personal and family related than they are business related. But it was definitely different growing up, because while other kids were being taken to baseball games or, you know, to go out and play some sports or taken to Disneyland and stuff, my mom kind of did that stuff. My dad was all about marketing all the time. But there were lessons with it, and he loved to teach me stuff. And I do the same thing with my kids. And so when adversity would happen, you know, like when my dad was dealing with legal troubles, he didn't hide anything from me. So he saw, you know, he'd show me how he was dealing with things. And he had a brutal kind of honesty about him, which I have with my children too, which is, it's, you know, didn't tell you anything of any fairy tales about anything if you wanted. And the great part about that is I had so much trust that I would, you know, if I knew that all the parents were saying something, if I asked my dad, I knew I was going to get the truth out of him, because he didn't sugarcoat anything. And he also didn't he decided early on, not really early in his life, but early in my life, right, actually right before the day I was born, he got fired from his last job. And he decided to start doing everything radically different, and that included parenting. And, you know, he decided that if I was old enough to ask, I was old enough to know. He didn't believe in that, you know, children should be seen and not heard or anything like that. So I quickly, you know, became, you know, along with, you know, my brother and stuff, but his best friend. And we had a relationship that's a lot closer than most father-parent, I mean, you know, parent son relationships. So it was interesting, because my dad was a character. And if you ask anybody about it, you know, Kevin and I have this saying that is, if you know Gary Halbert, you have a Gary Halbert story. You didn't just meet him and like pass by, say hi. Oh yeah, he was nice. He ordered a steak. I mean, he joked with everybody. He messed with everybody. He would try and get them riled up. He would try and get them excited. He would try and get their greed glands going. He would try. I mean, he was experimenting with every human being he ran across, and strangers and family and friends. So, you know, there was all that kind of wild experience that was going on. And he gives you you grew up with a much different reality. You know, and that was true. I noticed also of several of his proteges, you know, and how you get small glimpses of it when you work with him, but you really got a lot of it if you lived with him, and you really got a lot of it if you were spending your, you know, day to day with him. And that's one of the reasons that made him a great marketer. And, you know, he taught me early on, showed me, you know, 'cause that's the best way to teach is to show, you know, for me, it was, he'd show me how things work. You know, one time, he wanted to impress upon me how much a few extra dollars to a housewife meant. So he ran an ad in the classified paper of the newspapers, because he said, you know, what I'm going to do is I'm going to run this ad saying, you know, wanted, you know, somebody who can do some typing in their spare time, you know, $10 an hour, you know, you can work your own hours from home and whenever you need and stuff like that. and my phone, he put this to my private phone, and it rang off the hook. You know, you just, if you picked up the phone and hung it up, it would still ring again. You know, it was just constantly going. This was in the 80s. So, I mean, he would do that just to demonstrate the power of a small ad to me, and just to demonstrate, you know, the understanding of what different people wanted. And I always say that, you know, great copywriters, you know, you can give them a niche and then they will go and they'll spend a month studying, you know. And I've heard idiotic statements about people, you know, you don't, you know, just use a template. You don't really need to know your customers. But that's the difference between millions of dollars and the kind of people who just, you know, throw something out online, get a few sales and call themselves an entrepreneur. But the copywriters who are really good, they'll go in, they'll dive in, they'll start to study, start to get to understand, learn the language of their prospects and so forth. Really good copywriters, I mean, really, you know, but even at a higher level of copywriters, they get to know their a particular prospect really well. They get to know them outside of just, you know, what they're thinking about when it comes to investments, what they're thinking about when it comes to mortgages, or what they're thinking about in that particular category. They'll get to know that prospect so well. And they usually gravitate toward a prospect that they really have a lot of empathy, which is them. My father, though, if you want to take it to the very next level, he pays attention to everybody. He wants to know what everybody's thinking, whatever, you know, he wants to know what motivates a teenage girl, what motivates a waitress, what motivates a young man, you know, in his 20s, what motivates a senior citizen, all wants to know what's their hopes and dreams and fears about all of them. And he'll test and see that, and see what is and isn't. And, you know, you came back from a thing with Ben, and I think Ben is, you know, one of these people who's very in touch with a lot of people. And, you know, you get into an Uber with him, and he's like, hey, how you doing? He's truly interested in knowing what the Uber driver is, you know, how they're having, how their day is. I get into Uber, and I say, hey, what's your busiest day? You know, I want to know the business end of everything. And do you know one of the things that nobody guesses? One of the busiest days for Uber is actually Sunday. And they don't. The reason why is people are going back from Saturday night to pick up their car where they've left it off, right? And people without cars, they've got their routine during the week down, so they know who to carpool with to get to work. They know what bus lines and, you know, trains to grab to go to work. But on Sunday, they want to go to some place where the buses and the trains aren't running frequently, right? Or they want to go somewhere that's a little, you know, out of the way, or meet up with their friends, or they make last minute plans. But Sunday turns out to be a big Uber day, right? The only reason I know that is because I have, you know, that instilled in me that not only the curiosity, but the curiosity about numbers and business, and the curiosity about, you know, what motivates people to do it. So I want to know, what job did you last leave to get your, you know, to become an Uber driver? And I want to know, how much do you make as an Uber driver? I want to know what days, you know, are the busiest ones to work, which ones they, you know, what your life is like as an Uber driver. You know, how do you prevent people from throwing up in the back of your car at 2 a.m. on a Friday night? that kind of interest. That kind of interest is the kind of interest my dad had about everybody and everything. So because of that, he was able to sell to middle-aged housewives. He was able to sell to, you know, people in business. He was able, you know, B2B. So he, you know, one of the things that make, and there will never be an opportunity to be as great as my father was, because, you know, now you have somebody who specializes in selling to just used car dealerships. You have somebody who specializes, and they put in so much work, and they put in so many years. You may be able to come in there with a few tricks to, you know, beat their control, but they'll quickly learn those tricks, and they have an understanding and a psychology, you know, an understanding of the psychology of their prospects so well that it's very hard to compete with them. Now, my father, when he started, very few people knew what the word copywriting was. We didn't say, you know, people, you know, say, you know, I write copy for a living. You say I wrote advertising. You know, and I don't say I teach copywriting. I tell people that I teach people how to write advertising, and sometimes they'll say, you know, how to write, you know, landing pages, you know, web pages, you know, and stuff like that, more specific to what they, you know, to something more that the common person will understand. And a lot of your job as a marketer and a copywriter, especially direct response, is to educate. And, you know, you explain to people why they need something, and then they go, okay, that's really great. Is there any way I can hire you to do that for me? You know, so half your job at the beginning, you know, with clients is actually teaching them what they need. But anyway, so my father was very much, he's experimenting and getting to know all of this. He had a fascinating interest. So, you know, he made friends with people who were older than him, people who were younger than him, people his own age. You know, he really wanted to know what made everybody tick. And I learned to want to know what makes everybody tick, you know, and pay attention to them, and not just people who fit my demographic, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I understand. I think you're around 10 years old and your father's a bit down on his luck. And you guys had a conversation at one of your favorite coffee shops. And you mentioned to him about how lucky you were because while your older brother was kind of playing with toys, you know, having fun being rich, you were learning how to become rich. Now, I can only imagine what impact that's had on your life moving forwards. But, you know, like your father was really ahead of his time. Like where did he come to the idea of advertising? How did your father even be introduced to advertising in the first place?
He was into sales already. So he had done door-to-door sales. He had worked for Pitney Bowes. He had worked for Standard Oil of Ohio. And persuasion was always something he was gifted at. And so, you know, he was very smart. And so, but when he was younger, you know, growing up in the 50s, he had Coke bottle, thick glasses, you know, they didn't have contacts back then. And, you know, that made you nerdy. He was always, my grandmother said he was always headed out the door with a book and a pocket full of vegetables in his back because he liked to sit there and eat vegetables and read his books. So, but he wasn't particularly like, you know, into sports. And he grew up in a town that everything is about football. Everything. He grew up in an area where they basically, that's where most of American football started in the U.S. And so, but he wasn't into sports. And so his parents weren't wealthy and everything. So his main power of getting things that he learned was persuasion. So he was very good at that at an early age. So that's an important key to who he became. The second thing was he started, after he got out of the military, he started going into sales, and he was very good at that, but he went into sales. But, you know, he knew that he could only reach and go after one prospect at a time, And then he read about direct mail through the Thomas Hall, and he said that what he did was he imagined it, and he says, you know, it reminded him immediately of, I think it's a trot line fishing is what he called it, where he would go with his father and his uncle and they would string a line across the Ohio River, and little lines, other little bait lines would lie in the water, and they would just sit there and wait, and every once in a while reel that in and a bunch of fish would be on it. You know, and he said it looked like that. And he said he knew immediately what he wanted to do for the rest of his life.
Wow.
And so he started practicing. He started learning from everybody, and he started, you know, creating direct mailers and trying different things and following the advice of all the gurus at the time. And he was even, one other story that's very famous out there is, and it is true, is we were living in this house. My mom had come home from, or he was speaking to my mom after he got fired. And he said, you know, Nancy, he goes, you know, I just don't want to deal with any life if it doesn't get any better than this. And she said, well, why don't you just strike out and do on your own? She said, you know, I'm a nurse. We'll live off of my salary while you try and get something running. And so they agreed to do that. And my dad would run test mailings, and he had spent the electricity money on postage. So they would be waiting for test results from a direct mail in the dark, or, you know, with candles or whatever, you know. So he was that committed. Yeah. And then it wasn't working. And then he invented what is now known as gun to the head marketing. Everybody, you know, uses that term, but it was actually my dad who had described the term and did it first. And he said, you know, I imagine somebody sat down with a gun to my head and said, I'm going to pull the trigger. If you don't make a sale, Gary, what would you do differently? And my dad was very ultimate-ish. So he says that, and that was his politicized or politically correct watered-down version. Because I know my dad, because he talked to me all the time. He would never say, Bon, if somebody put a gun to your head. He'd always say, Bond, if somebody put a gun to Emma, your daughter's head. Okay, so I know that first virtual gun that was actually pointed at my head. At sale. Because he was that way. He was the ultimatum. And I'm the same way too. I want to know what's the best. I want to know what's the richest, what's the fastest, what's the, you know, I want to know the ultimate of everything. And so, you know, when I create hypotheticals like my dad does, I go for the ultimate, right?
Mm. Yeah.
Now you have to back that down later on because people, you know, that's a, you know, you don't want to get them the shakes or whatever. But so he sat there and said, what if somebody put a gun to my children's head or my own head? And what would I do differently to make a sale? And he said, well, I would do this and this and that. And so he started breaking the rules to what the masters had said. Mm. And he created his first monster success that way. And then he decided, you know, he was throwing out rule book after rule book after rule book. He threw it out on parenting. He threw it out on how to behave with everything. And sometimes, you know, sometimes the things were a mistake and sometimes it wasn't. But I mean, you know, he was, when people talk about making mistakes, he was the quickest one to say, you know, oh, okay, that's a mistake. Okay, that was, you know, I fell down, I got dirty. Okay, let's go on to the next thing. And it never held him back. I mean, his, you know, he would get into a funk if it didn't do well. And the weird part was is some of the stuff that he felt didn't do well was actually already a winner.
Yeah.
You know, the way that I do it is differently, but the way he did it was if he ran a test or he put it in the mail. Well, first, let me tell you what I do. What I do is if I launch something and I say, okay, I'm going to put this out there and it's an email campaign. I don't sit there and wait for results. I start working on something, the next thing right away. I have a list of projects. Okay. Mm-hmm. So if the next one comes on and it doesn't work, I've got the next thing that I'm trying anyway. And so if it bombs or something doesn't work, I'm like, okay, well, I'm still got this other thing that I'm working on. And I still get momentum from that. And then if it does work, I'm like, okay, great. And not only did that work, but I got this other thing that's going to go on too. So I get momentum no matter what. Well, my dad couldn't do that because tests cost a lot of money back then. That wasn't, you know, you couldn't just pop something up on the internet and start working. So what he would do is we would go to, you know, he'd put a, you know, he'd call and find out, okay, did you mail to the mailing house? And they say, yes, it's in the mail. And he would actually hit me on the shoulder and go, we're in the mail. Not Howard, you know, he's like, okay, we're in the mail, Bond. And then you know, what he would do is we'd go to a movie and we'd go to a bookstore and we'd kill time during the day. And then he would call back later on to find out if any orders came in. And he was paying attention. Now, if this was usually, if it was an ad, it would be that day. If it was a mailing piece, you didn't know, he'd go call for early results, which would be like the next day or a day afterwards, because you waited, you know, the only mail that was delivered the next day was something very close to where you would drop the mail from.
Mm.
But, you know, and then we would find out what the results were. But it's, you know, and if he ran an ad and it broke even, everybody else would build a business on that, because you break even and you've got, let's suppose that, you know, you needed a thousand buyers to be in the money. Mm. Okay. But you really only got, you know, 700, which just paid for the ad. So you broke even, you didn't make any money. Well, you had 700 buyers that you could now send a direct mail piece to. And 70 of those, 10% of those, or, you know, 35 of them converted to buying something else, you were in the profit. Mm. And so, but my dad, he only liked runaway big winners. He only liked the kind of ads and the kind of stuff that, you know, you didn't have to mail them a second time before you started getting your profit. Mm. And he preached this. He told me, you know, he was one of the, and I'm the same way, it's, you don't follow what I do, follow what I say. Because, you know, he wanted only runaway big winners that were big, huge money makers on the front end. You know, he didn't like loss leaders. You know, he would do a little loss leader, like when he published his book, How to Make Max Money in Minimum Time. He would when he published that book, he knew that he wasn't making money off the book, but people would then go and buy his newsletter. This was back when it was $200 a year and stuff like that. But that was about the limit of his loss leader appreciation for it. But he taught it to everybody else. And he would say, Bond, you know, a guy like Eric take a campaign like that and make $1 million. But, you know, I'm going to go on and move to something else and make another big swing. Mm. So, but he brushed off, you know, mistakes and said, oh, well, I guess that didn't work. You know, he was the kind of guy, if he went, you know, to a bar and picked up on a girl and, you know, she got slapped in the face, he'd go, okay, don't say that again. He'd walk off and try something different with someone else type of thing. Yeah. So he brushed off failure, like, you know, I mean, and used them as learning experiences, but, you know, he was a perfect example of all that.
Yeah. And what you said before too, like he certainly had a high amount of dedication and focus too. Like I understand the coat of arms letter that he wrote. Was it, took him 18 months to put that together?
Well, it took him 18 months to perfect it. They kept, you know, after they got a winner, they started testing it and testing it. And a lot of people don't know it, but I come from an entrepreneurial family of very smart characters, because he was getting, like, he'd get this great result and then he'd get this bad result. He'd get this great result. And he's like, I don't know why. And my mom's like, why didn't you know? You don't see it, bonehead? She's like, look, if you mail to everybody named Miller and everybody know, they all know somebody else named Miller that they're not related to, they're not interested in the coat of arms or the book of Miller. They know it's, they don't think of their name as rare or special. And if you mail to people with, you know, there's only 10 of them in the United States, there's not enough money to set up a mailing for that. So what they did was, based on what my mom said, they created a formula and they said, okay, if your name had this many names, if there were this many people in the US with your names, it was profitable enough to mail. But if you had too many and it was too common, it wasn't profitable to mail and they wouldn't mail that. And all of a sudden, everything was profitable because they weren't mailing to the names that weren't profitable. And that was my mom's breakthrough. But what happened was they would, you know, they said, okay, my dad was like, we got to test this, we got to test this. So almost every single word of that was tested. And they would find, they would, you know, they would try stuff that would be different. And they found that this thing was supposed to come from a small town, Bath, Ohio, that the mailing piece did. And as soon as they went to a bigger mailing house, a bigger print shop that was out of, in a bigger city like Cleveland, the results dropped dramatically. So what they did was they would pay to have that mail moved to Bath, Ohio and shipped out of that post office so that the postmark said Bath, Ohio. And the copywriting psychology behind that whole thing, a lot of people don't understand this. You know, people, other people aren't stupid. They're doing a sniff test. Back then, you know, their spam filter was your brain. You're constantly going, okay, where's the rub here? What's the BS? Mm. What's the part that's, you know, that doesn't ring true? And you had to pass every part of it. So, I mean, he made sure that the address wasn't some boulevard. And he made sure that the address wasn't, you know, had a large number in it, you know, because this is supposed to come from, you know, a middle-aged housewife who had done some research and happens to have extra copies of a report, right? So he did, but when you talk about dedication, this was even before it was a success, he would go and he would pitch his, you know, make the same offer in person, door to door. And he'd look in people's faces and see what turned them off and what turned them off.
Yeah, wow.
And a lot of, you know, and I still kind of do that. I take my copy and I read it to people because most of my market are people who are copywriters. So, that's the thing I always found amazing is I was my, you know, I could persuade my father better than anybody else would because, you know, he had a great BS detector, right? He had been around all the blocks. But, you know, and so my, his coworkers, his employees, his, even my brothers and my family and everybody, if they wanted something really important from my dad, they would call me and either ask me how to present it to my dad or ask if it was really important. They'd ask me to talk to my dad.
Yeah.
Right. They say, you know, can you talk to dad about this? And can you, you know, can you get this? So I had to learn how to persuade the persuader and he was in a different mood every day. So, I mean, my first job was to call up and say, okay, what mood's he in? But this is a great marketing lesson, but I would also learn his timing, his routine. Everybody's got a time and a routine. So I'm like, okay, you know, the time when he's got his, you know, defenses down, you know, it might be Sunday night. The time when he's in go mode and, you know, and if it's business related and need, you know, and you've got the facts and he can make a real fast decision and it's not a big, you know, hardship for him and everything, it might literally be Monday morning. Mm-hmm. That was my dad's time. My dad's, a lot of people, you know, we mailed on Tuesday. We wanted the mail to land on people's desks on Tuesday. so that they could make a buying decision after the Monday morning blues, you know, getting a handle on their week and before they started thinking about the weekend. And that's still kind of the case where in the modern world version, I try and make emails land at about, for business to business, because that's the one I'm in, 10 a.m. on a Tuesday morning or, you know, Wednesday morning. And so, because I don't want to be that, I don't want to be in that batch of emails when you first log on in the morning. Because when you're doing that, you just got your finger on the delete button, you know, trying to get a handle on your email inbox. So you're deleting this and you're deleting that, you know, and then a little later, if it's a long email, longer, you know, if it's super long, I'll move it to a web page and just, you know, give you a reason to get off of the email and go to a web page. But if it's a little bit longer email, I would like it to come on like a Sunday, because it's, you know, if you're checking your email on a Sunday, you're kind of bored and looking for something to do, you know, whereas Monday you're trying to get a handle on your work. So I never want email to show up. You know, all these people say, you know, send it out at 4 a.m. so everybody wakes up to it on Monday morning. That's insane. And then, but you know, test it every once in a while, all of this changes, but some things don't change. It's like webinars. You want good webinar attendance? It's always Thursday. You know, and you figure, okay, wait a minute, isn't prime time, you know, like all the best, the highest rated TV shows are on Thursday, right? You figure everybody wants to go and do that on Thursday. No, the webinars on Thursday evenings, those are that's the highest ranking time. Yeah. And everybody tests it and they try different times and that's the highest ranking time and you got to live with what it is. You know, I mean, timing is really very critical. And, but anyway, back to my original story, I would try and figure out my dad's timing, you know, where he was and what space, you know, this is not the right time to bug him. Like there were certain times you just did not even bother to bug him. Like if he was watching 60 Minutes on Sunday evening, just, you know, forget about it. All you're going to do is piss him off. He's going to say no, just because, you know, you tried to do that. Oh, I'm sorry. My little phone is going off. It'll stop in a second.
That's fine. Yeah. So, recently we got to hang out in Australia and I was absolutely blown away by the depth and knowledge that you have in the copywriting, the marketing industry, and probably more so the level of detail in which you guys go to and think through from a strategic perspective. And you mentioned there too, like your dad, you know, Gary was talking about mailing out the coat of arms letter, that just even changing where it was mailed out from made a significant impact in obviously the open rate or the read rate or the buy rate. What I'm curious to know is how have you taken and how have you applied the wisdom from Gary Halbert into the 21st century? Because from what I've seen and my understanding is that marketing hasn't changed. You know, it comes down to three kind of core keys. You know, number one, understanding your niche. Number two, creating a compelling offer. And number three, you know, creating copy or a message that can articulate that offer. But how have you taken what you guys learned with all that mailing out and everything back in the day into the 21st century, into email marketing, into the likes of Facebook and Google, Twitter, Instagram? Like, how have you taken that into today? And what has been your biggest learning so far?
Okay. First of all, when it comes down to, I take it to a different level, because yes, you got to understand what motivates people with the timing of what motivates them, but you also need to understand the media and, you know, the way that they're thinking when they're getting through their email, when they're on Facebook, when they're doing anything. What's happening is you understand, you know, when they're on Facebook, for the most part, they're not off looking for something, you know, they're not, you know, you're sending them something, but they're kind of like perusing on their phone and flitting around and stuff like
cat
that.
Photos.
Yeah. So one of the things that I was the first one to go after and start teaching people is I was putting together a website and I'm like, okay, I want people to communicate with me and I want to communicate with email. What's going to be my biggest hurdle? Yeah. And so I said, okay, what do I do when I'm online and I'm about to give somebody an email address? I said, I give them a fake email address. I give them a spam email address. When somebody says they got something I want. And I was like, well, I don't want fake email addresses. And, you know, and I was the first one to start teaching this. And I said, you know, that, you know, what's the difference here? What would make me give them a primary email address? You know, something that I check often. And what makes me stop doing that? And so I went through a series of, you know, thought exercises, but just like, you know, I said, okay, I would do it this way. And then I would, this is what makes the difference between me wanting this and not wanting that. And that's where it really kind of starts, is being, you know, brutally honest with the way that you feel with something. The one thing I find amazing with copy is people write a piece of copy and they hand it to their wife and say, or their mother or their friend, and they say, read this and tell me what you think. And they read it and they go, oh, it's great and wonderful. Amazing. And I love this. Yeah. All this other stuff. The other guy on the other end of the email can just hit delete and stop reading it any time whatsoever without worrying about offending you. Right. Yeah. And so we do what I call the, I don't know who coined the term first, but it's the so what test. And, you know, you just imagine yourself as the most selfish, arrogant, you know, in a rush jerk of a guy who doesn't care about anybody else. And he's not concerned about anybody's feelings and is constantly saying, what's in it for me? How does this relate to me? And if it doesn't relate to them, cut it out. You know, you know, you don't want to know what, a lot of people say, well, you know, I've spent 40 years in advertising and I've got a degree in this and I did this and the, you know, you're like, blah, 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 get to the point. I care about that when I need a proof elements and I've already decided to buy from you or I decided that I need an advertiser and I want somebody with experience. That's when that comes into play. Mm. We're right at the beginning. That's not what I care about. Mm. And so, you know, my dad and I and, you know, the good marketers are really good at saying, I wouldn't give a shit about this, you know? So, and this is the point where I would delete the email. Okay. Yeah. This is the point where I'd stop reading. And so, but you also have to understand in the 21st century, what you're doing is walking through it. So how do I feel when I get it, you know, I see this ad running over and over in Facebook and you're about to see an experiment that I'm doing. One of my first Google ads that I did got a double digit click through response. And this is after everybody had learned SEO. And, you know, because in the beginning, everybody got a double click through response because nobody knew what a Google ad was. But this was after all of that, right? After the updates and people getting slaps and all this other stuff. And I was in this particular niche and I was going through and I was going, okay, this is what I'd expect if I clicked on all these ads. So I added one line, which we're experimenting with a Facebook ad. This podcast I will go out after this experiment is over. And because I think when everybody sees those Google ads, what they do is they say, you know, okay, what's going to happen here? And I add one line of copy, which is no signups necessary. Because that's going to make people go, oh, let me click on that real quick. Right. And then you give them some value. And then you offer them a chance to sign up for more value. Okay. That's a different formula from what everybody is doing. Everybody's like, give me your name and give me your address, and then I'll give you something of value. Mm. And you see what everybody else is doing and you say, okay, you know, oh, I don't want to click on that because it's just going to ask me for my name and my email address. And I don't, you know, and I'm not that interested at, you know, without knowing, you know, how good this person is or what they want. Now that will work to a degree.
Yeah.
But I think we're going to find out that what'll work better is people saying, okay, wait a minute, no signups. I can go a little bit further. I can click that. Then I give them some value and they go, oh, really? That actually is a very good tip. And I say, hey, yeah, like 10 more tips, do this. Right.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I have the chance to do it. So I think I'll get more people into that, to the, you know, I'll add that little extra step. And so it'll widen the funnel at the front. But anyway, so when I did that with the Google ad, what they're doing is they're trying to decide between these 10 different Google ads, right? And one ad is promising everything that they're actually dreaming that they're going to get when they did that Google search, right? But there's other ones that are kind of promising, you know, some are promising some of it, some are promising other parts of it, but they know that every one of them is going to require them to sign up for something. And even if they didn't require to sign up, at least my ad made them think the other ones are going to make them sign up. So the people started clicking on it and going, okay. And then what I did was I put up a thing in the corner. I gave them a ton of value. And I said, if you want even more value and even more stuff, click up here. Mm-hmm. So when it came to email marketing, I was the first one to go after really primary email addresses. And so one of the, you know, there's a lot of ways that you do this. And, you know, really quickly, and this is a longer speech I normally give, but in a really quick format, what happens is you go searching for a solution online for something, and some marketer says, I'll give that to you, but give me your email address. So you give them a spam email address. And then you go to your spam email box. There's one to five, there's like 500 or 1,000 emails have piled up there since the last time you went in there. You go straight to the top, you check out their solution. They either failed you and you're back to the internet searching, or you're off practicing it. But either way, you forget about it. And you ignore all the 500 to 1,000 emails that are in your spam email address. Mm-hmm. You go back to your primary email address, and you still check the spam every once in a while in case grandma or somebody else, or, you know, domain renewal or something else actually was important is in the spam box that you don't want to miss.
Yeah.
So the moral of the story is it would be better to be in the spam box of a primary email address, right, than in the primary box of a spam email address. Worry about getting into a primary email address first.
Yeah.
And so the ability to walk through and say, hey, how would I do this differently? Because when my dad started going online, nobody had extra email addresses. They weren't bothering. But now they do.
Yeah.
And I said, I know what I would do it. If you gave me content that was designed and really valuable, but something I wanted to consume on a mobile phone, on a smartphone, because nobody basically runs more than one email address or non-primary email addresses on their smartphone. So we developed a thing called the Gary on the Go program. We say, you know, this is back in the day. We say we formatted these emails so that they're very easy to read on your smartphone, so you can get a good education while you're waiting in line at the bank or at the airport or whatever. You know, so when you wanted that on your phone, you had to sign up with an email address that was attached to your phone. It was a primary email address, right?
So good.
But the process is there are other revolutionary like breakthroughs and everything that Kevin and I will do, but it's about going through and understanding the prospects. It's about understanding, you know, everybody, you know, it's about understanding where their mind is at, how they behave when they're looking on a web page versus looking through their email versus being on Facebook, different sites that you get a different attitude. When you're on LinkedIn, nobody's cruising LinkedIn for fuzzy pictures of cats or anything. Nobody spends as much time on LinkedIn as they do Facebook, but they're there for business. They're there to get stuff done. They're there for connections.
Yeah.
So give them business stuff. Give them connections. I had a friend of mine they were going to do a Facebook campaign for lipstick for teenage girls. And I was like, why are you doing that? And they said, what do you mean? I said, there's no teenage girls on freaking Facebook. They're all on Instagram.
Yeah.
Go over there. And then, so I didn't really know the market too well. I pulled my daughter aside and I said, okay, you know, who are the big influencers when it comes to makeup and makeup tutorials? She listed them off, rattled them off, like off the top of her head. She knew who they were. And I said, what's the terms that they use when they say something, you know, in my day, they'd say something was really cool. And she goes, oh, they use this term called on fleek. I'm like, okay, I've never heard of that. What does that mean? She goes, it means that it's really cool and on point. It's perfect, right? And I said, oh, okay. So I went back to my guy and I'm like, okay, this is how you cut a deal with the Instagrammers. This is how you do post swaps, all this, you know, and make sure that they say that this makeup is on fleek and, you know, give them all the feedback and everything. This is all from doing the research and trying to understand it. So I didn't pretend that I knew what a teenage girl was like. But I did know because I paid attention to my daughter that, you know, the teenage girls are looking at makeup tutorials on Instagram now. They're all doing it.
Yeah.
So I knew that they were there. And then I knew from my interest in the market how to do Instagram swaps and how to pay people to do posts on Instagram and things of that nature. But I knew that when it came down to the language, I wasn't that good about it. So I went now, you know, did the research for it.
Yeah.
You know, and that took me like 20 minutes. You know, but it was obviously way better than what the game plan was.
Yeah.
And it's because it's back to Gary Halbert lessons. I have an interest in knowing, like, oh, are you on Vine? You're like, Dad, what are you talking about? Vine's dead. It doesn't even exist anymore. you know, people think MySpace is dead. Do you know MySpace is actually now for the artists and entertainment and music industry. That's where they're all hanging out. You know? And if you pay attention to that, the reason you pay attention to it is out of curiosity. I have no interest in acting or music, you know, being a musician or anything like that. But I know that because once I heard that, I file it in my brain. I go, okay, that might be useful later.
Yeah.
You know, so if somebody comes to me and says, hey, I'm going to be doing, you know, I want to, connect up with people in the music industry. I'm going to take them off of Facebook. But anyway, so the real breakthroughs all come from a raw understanding of going through the process, walking in the shoes of people. You know, my dad's big breakthrough with email or with the direct mail campaign was understanding people come home, they're tired, they sort their mail over a wastebasket. Right. Mm. So how do I get my mail into the prime, you know, to the pile that they're going to open? I do the same thing. I'm like, how do people sort their emails? They sort them with different email addresses. What makes you get, what makes you get somebody's primary email address? They give you such cool stuff that you don't want to miss it when they've got something else. They also, they're sending out something that, you know, and you train that list. They're like, oh, you know, I'm sorry, you know, you missed this because you didn't open the email. Which I understand a lot of people have different email addresses, but you might want to try signing up with a primary email address so you don't mix the next flash sale because, you know, and things like that. But the principles are exactly the same. They're Gary Halbert principles of walking in their shoes, knowing them, being really honest about what it is, you know, without thinking they're going to like me because I'm Bon Halbert. That's not true. You know, there's, they're going to, you know, I had to, you know, like when it came to teaching copy and stuff like that, my dad had this after he was super successful and everybody knew who he was. You could, he could tell people the key to writing good copy is to wear brown shoes and they'd all go out and buy brown shoes. Okay. They would. Okay. I don't have that ability. I'm Gary Halbert's punk snot-nosed kid. Right. So the thing is, when I have to teach people, and I would do it without telling people what my last name was, and I would say, hey, you know, you do this and you do that, and people go, oh, damn, that makes so much sense. Why? They go, why didn't I think of that?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They go, and then they turn around. That's when you know that you've got them, and they say, okay, yes. And so I had to learn how to teach people about copywriting and teach people about direct response marketing in a way that was quick because I got tired of saying, you know, doing long speeches over and over again. So I had to do it in a way that was quick. I had to do it in a way that resonated with them and the light bulbs went off in their head right away. And the other thing that I like is, you know, I do have that strategic 10,000 foot view, but people will say things like, you know, stand out from your market and be different, but they don't tell you exactly how to
do that.
I'll tell you how, this is, what's your business? They'll tell me and they'll say, this is, you know, you need to stand out so that people aren't comparing you. So I know the same strategy and I'll say, and this is how you do it. Go do X, Y, and Z. So they go do X, Y, and Z, you know, and I give them a much more tactical strategy that goes along with it. Now, if you see the strategy, if you understand the full strategy, everything that you see being done online right now is the same. It was just done in print. People giving away books. My dad was giving away his book, using that as a calling card. He used his book as a calling card. You know, moving the free line. My dad gave away tons of newsletters for free online. Yeah. Every single thing that you see being done is a revamped, reskinned version of what had been done in the past.
Yeah.
And you know, me going after primary email addresses is me trying to figure out how to get people to open and read and open my mail over other people. My dad was doing that, you know, offline. Hmm. So if for me though, because I learned it so early, in life, and I heard the lessons so, you know, over and over. So When I sit down to do email, I'm like, okay, walk in the shoes of somebody who comes home and they're opened up their email. Mm. Okay. Well, how did they do this? How did they do that? And I learned and thought in the same processes that my father did, but I understand the core, you know, people would take his lesson and go, okay, use a live stamp, do this and this and this and that. I understood what you were doing is getting past the human spam filter, which is the brain. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I paid attention to everything. I'm like, okay, you got curiosity in that subject line that would get them open, but don't blow it with that preview line that Google shows, you know, and there's better ways to do it. I taught you guys better way in Melbourne, but what you do is just repeat that subject line right at the top and they go, okay, well, this is going to do it. So if I say, thank God my dad went to prison, you know, and a subject line and you go, okay, I got to open this to find out what he's talking about. And the preview line says, you know, people are going to think it's harsh for me to say so, but I have to admit, you know, my feelings are true that thank God my dad went to prison. So when they read that in the preview line, I'm keeping the curiosity going. They got to open it. Other people with a booze, they'll say, you know, you don't want to miss this. And then they'll, the first line will be, we're having a 24-hour flash sale.
Yeah. Delete. Delete, delete, delete. Yeah.
You know, it's understanding, it's walking it through and understanding it at a core level that really helps.
Yeah. It's interesting, Bon, because, you know, like I know for myself, when we got to hang out 5 minutes with you and my brain was exploding with so many ideas for our business and for our clients' business. And you know, we speak to a lot of people that are really struggling in business. And a lot of the time it's around generating leads and generating new business for their company. But, you know, we're kind of moving into society now where there's this whole copy and paste. I'll just go and, you know, rip off some guy's email and I'll just go and change a few things around and I'll make it my own and I'll send it out there. But equally too, there's a lot of business owners that are facing challenge or facing adversity and aren't willing to push through that, aren't willing to upskill, to learn or to seek mentors or advice to see them moving forwards. And one thing I get a lot from you every time we catch up is, you know, just how much both yourself but also your father, you know, it's a skill that's been trained from your father, was willing to just persist with something, just test and test and test and test and test and tweak and tweak and tweak and never seen failure as the be-all and end-all, but seen failure as an opportunity to rework things and do something different and almost challenge himself or challenge yourself to find a new way. So what I'd be curious to know is, like, what's been your biggest challenge, you know, over the last 20 or 30 years, whether it be personal, whether it be business, that you've had to overcome? And what has been the greatest learnings through overcoming that challenge or adversity?
Well, there's a lot of them, but thanks to my dad, I don't have, you know, growing up in the industry, I kind of knew immediately to not only sell hamburgers to a starving crowd, you know, because my dad's famous, you know, analogy is if I have a hamburger stand and God will come down and give you anything you want. He can give you the freshest ingredients, a great recipe, terrific signage. What would you want? And he'll beat you. And you go through and you say, I want this and this and that. And he'd say, I want a starving crowd.
Crowd.
That's what I want. What I do is I want a starving crowd. I don't want any other trucks around. I want the tastiest burgers that smell really delicious to everybody on the outside. I want their pockets to be filled with money. I want them to have just been, to have just been released from some play or something else, you know, so I go through those motions so much that I've, you know, that you don't, you know, I don't have the kind of bomb failure that my dad, you know, the rates and that's the difference is it makes it easier for me. It makes it easier for me to do that. And I don't take on clients. And that's where a lot of my dad's, you know, least successful ads would come from is because the clients actually, you know, got their demand of, I want this, I want to sell this. And they'd hire my dad and he took the job, but it's not something that, you know, everybody's automatically going to be starving for, and they're not going to allow him to make the changes that makes them really stand out compared to the other people. And he's selling something that looks like everything else. What I'll do is I'll come up with something and say, okay, this is what the market would really like and want. Well, you know, people want the world's greatest copywriters each reading an issue of the Gary Halbert Letter and adding valuable commentary, right? So let's put that together. It'll be quick and easy. And we do, and of course, people love it, you know. But the personal challenges I'll have, and it's because of my father, I'll know quickly how to get through them. Like, for example, I knew right away, that, you know, people would never make the assumption that I know what my father knew, because people don't assume that, you know, Michelangelo's son knows how to be a sculptor.
Yeah.
Right. And if he does, he's still no Michelangelo. Right. And I knew that going in, you know, and I knew that when it came down to direct marketing and everything like that. So one of the things that I learned to do or quickly learned to do is, one is I would teach people and show people things without saying that I'm Gary Halbert's kid at all. And people would eventually figure out who I was. Mm. And I would hit on something and they go, oh, wait a minute, that's pretty smart. And that obviously came after Gary had passed away because, like, you know, Facebook didn't exist or something like that. And they go, wow, you know, you did this, you did that. And how'd you do that? And the conversation would shift towards me. And then pretty soon I actually spent a fair amount of time, like a good couple of years, where people were interviewing me and had no questions about my father whatsoever. And which I love talking about my father. It's not a problem, best days of my life learning from him. So what I had to learn, what I learned to do was I have to be really good. I don't have to be better than my father. I just have to not be incorrect. I have to know what I'm talking about. Yeah. I have to show that compared to his other proteges and people who work and, copywriters, that I wasn't somebody who was just sitting around, going to fetch water for my father. I was somebody who was being taught, paid attention to, and learned it all and applied it. And so showing people that was, and I knew that going in. I said, I just need to show that. And so the one thing that I was very proud of is I said, we need to cement our father's legacy, in his legend that he is. And we did. And we helped, and we continued to do that. When he passed, everybody thought we were going to shut down his website. And, you saw the traffic spike because everybody's going down there to try and download every letter that he ever wrote and everything. And then when they found out that we were keeping it up, they're like, oh, thank you. glad you kept it up and stuff like that. And there are certain changes we'd love to make to that site, but we can't because we're doing it out of honor for, keeping it the way that he wanted. People are like, we'd like these in order. It's like, no, he didn't want them in order. That's why they're not in order. we want them in this format. Well, no, he didn't want them in that format specifically. And so we keep it the way that it is. There are going to be a few changes coming soon because I do feel like we've earned the right to make a few changes.
Yeah.
But they won't go do anything that's completely against the grain of what he wanted. So we respected his legend. And then the other thing that I did though is accidental discoveries are what really make things, paying attention to the accidental things that you do right. I have so many times where I'll teach somebody something and they'll go, you know what? I had this one winner that I couldn't replicate and I understood, and it was different from all these others, but now you're teaching this in the editing process. That's exactly what I did with that winner. Now I get it. Now I get why it worked. Mm. But what they had discovered by accident, and they couldn't replicate it because they weren't able to reverse engineer why it worked. Right. So I realized, people don't want me. And I'm an idea guy. I'm not a copywriter like my dad. I'm never shooting forward to being the next Gary Halbert or the greatest copywriter who ever lived. That's not what I want. It's not who I'm after. But even if I was, nobody else wants it for sure. Everybody wants to be his best student and, they want to be me when they read the Boron letters and they want their dad to tell them, how to live life and give them life lessons and they imagine that they are me and so forth. But what they want is they want to be a better version of me all the time.
Yeah.
And I get that. I completely get it and I understand it. So nobody wants me to be, to inherit the mantle, right? And, to proudly, to hold it up and everything like that, because there's just this aspect of Frank Lloyd Wright's son, did some great, fabulous, cool, unique things, but he will never get the name recognition or the cachet that his father had, right? And nor should he. My dad turned around and he said to me one day, he goes, Bon, like I say, the greatest thing is every time you do something that's great or everything you do right, I get credit for it. I taught you how to think. He goes, but every time you screw up, that's your mother. he does get credit for everything I do right. When I started getting focusing on open rates, I was getting open rates so high, both AWeber and GetResponse were saying your open rates are amazing. And but that's based on Gary Halbert teaching.
Yeah.
But here's the one people do love and they can accept. They love it when they see me teaching my daughter. People really love the idea of Gary Halbert's granddaughter, right, picking up the mantle and taking over. It's a generation. One generation in between. So when I started I started teaching her stuff to do on a website and like getting higher open rates, and she started getting really high open rates. She had a small list, like 3,000 names, but she was getting like a 76% open rate, right?
Wow.
And everybody's everybody's like, oh my God, you know, the princess of print, she's awesome. And, you know, she's good. So one of the things that I realized, this was a learning curve for me, and that was an accidental. I knew from my own perspective that what I should do is always, you know, and I've never, I always had in my heart to do it anyway, but to always honor my father, give him a complete credit, give him complete tribute to everything. Never, you know, I can be seen in the spotlight that shined on him, but never dance in front of him type of thing. But my daughter can.
Yeah.
Right? And people love, absolutely love seeing a third generation learning it. And they love seeing me show my kids, which I do. They love seeing my kid. And so when we did the All-Star Audio Series, I the letter I chose was the big idea. Hmm. And I think if I remember, I was like, okay, I'm going to give you seven big ideas or seven lessons from the letter that I'm going to point out. And each one I started with, I think it was my son or one of my children first, my son or my daughter. You hear them go, Gary Halbert's secret lesson number one. And the second one goes, Gary Halbert's super secret lesson number two. And then the other one goes, Gary Halbert's super duper, and it keeps building. But it's my kids in there, you know, introducing the lessons that I'm about to teach. So when people turn around and they see that I'm taking what my dad's work and I'm not just using it for my own benefit. I'm not just taking his teachings and using them for my own benefit, which I am, you know, but I'm not going around saying, you know, hey, I did this and I give my dad full credit when he does it. Or when he taught me a core principle, but people turn around and go, they realize they had the same access to the same lessons I did in a way.
Yeah.
You know, I got access to lessons that, you know, you couldn't legally publish, but they got the access to the same lessons, but you didn't see any of his proteges or anybody else going after primary email addresses. They didn't make that. They didn't make the, you know, they were still figuring out how to do direct mail. They didn't have that core understanding because they weren't learning at 10 years old.
Yeah.
They started, you know, after they had already learned about copywriting and what they wanted. But when people see me taking that, there is no animosity, there's no jealousy, there's nobody who thinks that there's going to be any concern that my daughter is going to all of a sudden usurp the throne of Gary Halbert or try to, because that's the one thing people, you know, that I knew right going in is people need to know I'm never going to, and it's true, I'm never going to try and even get close to the Gary Halbert throne. I don't want that. I've been the one, you know, helping shine a light on the Gary Halbert throne and go, you know, all hail the king, right? But when they see me teaching my daughter, all that washes away and they go, okay, yeah, I would really love to see her do more things. And yeah. I'll see people who will much later on bring it up and go, you know, when I saw you do that thing with your daughter, it was fantastic. You know, I mean, showing that you were teaching her at such a young age and stuff like that. So that was one of those things that I knew what my problem was going to be at the get-go, and I knew how to get around it. But I accidentally discovered an even better way around it.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's what good marketing is about is, you know, like stories. People are asking me all the time, how do you write a good story? You don't write a good story. You discover a good story.
Yeah.
You don't become a good story writer. You become a good story lover who discovers a story from somebody else. And then, you dig it out of your clients, you dig it out of the product, you dig it out of the industry, you dig it, you know, and then when you realize something that really hits you, go, oh, that's really fascinating and cool. I didn't know that. That's a shocking bit of information. I mean, that's what you use.
Yeah.
Right. And then what you do is you experiment and you test stuff. And sometimes you're testing stuff and you have the reason I was showing my daughter how to get high open rates is because I was teaching her.
Yeah.
You know, and then it got out that it was like, oh, hey, look what he did. You know, I did a little bit of parent bragging. I'm like, oh, check out what Emma did, right? And people go, oh, that's so cool. You know, and I was like, okay, I accidentally discovered, you know, that this was going to be something. So, you know, my goal has always been to take the Gary Halbert legend and turn it into a Halbert legacy. Now, that doesn't mean a Halbert legacy of copywriting. It means a Halbert legacy of continuing to teach and provide people with the best direct response marketing educations, you know, to continue that tradition that my dad did. Because my dad was not only a great copywriter, you know, he started learning how to write copy the day I was born. He started teaching, learning how to teach copy with me. Right. So I've been there every step of the way. So I know all of his lessons. I have additional lessons of my own. I have, that nobody, my dad didn't teach me, that I learned on my own just from pattern recognition, that I learned from my dad's copy without him ever explaining it to me or to anybody else, but also stuff I did on my own. But I carry on the tradition. We carry on a lot of traditions. When you call the number on the top of the website, that's a direct personal number. Kevin answers that phone. My dad's phone number at the top of his newsletter was his phone number.
Yeah.
You would call up, he would pick it up, and people are shocked. I was expecting a secretary or somebody to pick it up. And we continue that tradition. We continue the tradition of trying to innovate. We continue the tradition of trying to help more people learn and to, put out more info and stuff so that people can become better direct response marketers. And we do a lot more focusing on the big ideas and the strategies and, stuff like that than we actually do in copy. But my dad started the tradition of writing the letters to me. I write letters to my own kids.
Yeah.
About marketing and business and so forth. So yeah. We're continuing that. So what I want to do is take it from very quickly, my dad's legend to the Halbert legacy to my children, to the Halbert dynasty, if possible. And I don't know if it'll work, we'll find out. But meaning, I don't know if it'll work. It'll be, my daughter's got the knack for it that she has the interest for.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping what she'll do is I'm hoping she'll say, that's a lot easier way to make money and it's a lot more fun. But I'm not going to push her into it.
Yeah. Well, Bond, I think you guys are doing a fantastic job in keeping the Halbert aligned. And I'm sure without a doubt that the legacy will continue and continue on into dynasty with your daughter too. So, mate, look, I want to say a huge thank you. I've really appreciated your time. We could talk, continue to talk for hours. I've actually seen that Kevin tried to jump into the room. There he is again. So, mate, thank you so much. Really appreciate it for all you guys out there. That was the comeback game with the illustrious Bond Halbert. So thanks very much. There's many, many pieces of gold in there that I'd like to see people applying in their business. And how can they get in contact with you? How can they learn more from you guys?
Well, you can learn more from us, but the main person, if you haven't, is go to the GaryHalbertLetter.com. I mean, that's where I got my main lessons. I'm available at BondHalbert.com. But this is... Everything starts with the GaryHalbertLetter.com. Paris Lampropoulos, one of the greatest copywriters around, said the world of copy, all roads lead to Gary Halbert. You can look us up on Amazon and other things like that, but you need to go to the GaryHalbertLetter.com if you've never been there, and you will find yourself addicted.
Yeah. I can definitely contest to that. I can't put the book down. Absolutely love it.
Great.
Excellent. Thanks, Bond. Thanks so much for your time. And hopefully we had to get you on board for another episode at a later date, because I'm sure there's many more stories and much more insights and knowledge to share with the guys out there. But look, thanks very much. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Sure. Enjoy your evening.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.